realize for men and women to accept the roles that God has uniquely designed them for is a revolutionary way of living today? Why has the standard become the exception? John helps answer the questions on today's Grace to You. Perhaps you're familiar with the revolutions in Egypt, Syria, and the Ukraine, nations whose citizens have challenged the powers that be. Yet, as significant, as newsworthy as those revolutions are, there's another kind of revolutionary living that should be happening right now in your home. Today on Grace to You, John MacArthur explains how your family, especially your marriage, should challenge the culture around you. The lesson you're about to hear is a part of John's study from Titus chapter 2 called Revolutionary Living in a Dark Culture. And now to see why following the Bible standards for men and women makes you, well, revolutionary, here's John MacArthur.
Titus chapter 2, and let me just read verses 2 and 3. Older men are to be temperate, dignified, sensible, sound in faith, in love, in perseverance. Older women, likewise, are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips, not enslaved to much wine, teaching what is good. Now, obviously, the message is going to be addressed to older men and older women. And I think that's a very fitting subject, particularly for our time and place in history. Material comfort, medical care, and a low birth rate have led America to what is called the graying of America and an old population. They tell us in 25 years, one out of every five people will be over 65 and one out of every 10 will be over 80. The graying of America. We know it's here. We see it all around us. I suppose in some ways we laugh at it. Bob Hope said, "You know you're old when the candles cost more than the cake." And Agatha Christie wrote on one occasion that she married an archaeologist. And someone asked, "Why would you marry an archaeologist?" To which she replied, "Because the older I get, the more he'll appreciate me." And we want to have a humorous approach to that. You know, they say there are only three stages in life: youth, adulthood, and my, you're looking well. And when they start saying that to you, you know where you are. But there is some reality to this getting old that is perhaps not quite as humorous. There's a certain sadness in it. We're glad we know what we know as we get older, but we wish we had youth to express it. As someone said, it's a shame that youth was wasted on people so young. There are negative aspects to getting old. That's true. We become creatures of somewhat formidable and unbreakable habits. And the longer we do them, the harder they are to deal with. Sometimes even our besetting sins become so much a part of the fabric of our lives that even recognition of them becomes difficult. Sometimes we get a little bit obstinate and a little bit stubborn, and sometimes we think we know more than we do know, and sometimes we think age equals wisdom, and it doesn't. It should bring wisdom, but it may not be the same thing. No, there are definitely some negative aspects to getting old. In fact, if you want to see a little bit of a prosaic look at what aging is like, you need only to turn to the last chapter of Ecclesiastes. I would draw you there for just a moment. Ecclesiastes follows the book of Proverbs, and the final chapter is chapter 12, and it gives an insight, I think, into sort of the downside of aging. The writer says in verse 1, "Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth. Enjoy God while you're young. Know God while you're young. Let God be the central figure in your life while you're young before the evil days come. Well, the implication there is that the older you get, the more evil life becomes, the more unfulfilling, the more dissatisfying, the more disillusioning. He calls them the years when you will say, I have no delight in them. Commit your life to God and enjoy God and make God the center of everything while you're young, before you'll not be able to experience all the rich delights of His creation. Part of getting old. Before the sun, the light, the moon, the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. The cloudy times in life, the more barren and bleak times in life when you're old. Kind of a bleak way to look at old age, but it's reality. All of us feel it coming. And just because you're growing old, life doesn't have to be bleak. I mean, it's certainly for a Christian to be rewarded as a crowning time of life with a level of spiritual maturity you can't have in your youth. All those who know Christ, all those who have walked with Him for any length of time should look forward to old age, because it takes us nearer to heaven, doesn't it? It puts us in a situation where we have accumulated spiritual experience, which makes us truly rich. It enables us to be the leaders and the mentors and the models and the examples for the young. It allows us to filter out life and keep what we think is really valuable. Should be a good time. And you know, in the life of the church, it's really very important to have people who are godly seniors. And that's what Paul is saying to Titus. Let's go back to Titus. He's saying, you know, as you look at your congregation, Titus, you need to start your instruction with the older people because they're so crucial. So the aging of Christians is a blessing. I think churches today don't understand that. I have heard a couple of comments from people who've gone over to Russia and the Ukraine and come back and said, well, we really can't work through the church over there. They're just a bunch of old people. That's a terrible, terrible insight into the shallowness of some people's thinking. It's the aged people in the congregation that provide its strength, its stability, and its wisdom. Older believers, should they be in great numbers in the future in the church, are going to make the church a better place, a richer place. The maturity of godliness will be a benediction to the body of Christ. The aging of America means the aging of the church. The aging of the church could be a great, great blessing. Certainly, God has told us to revere those who are older than we are, those who are the aged, who have walked with Him. Leviticus 19:32 says, you shall rise up before the gray-headed and honor the aged. Job 12:12, wisdom is with the aged, with long life is understanding. The gray head is a crown of glory if it be found in the way of righteousness. Somebody old who's walked a long time in the path of righteousness is a treasure of wisdom and a treasure of experience and a treasure of understanding. A triumphant Christian who has fought the battle over and over and over and been victorious, who has experienced everything that the young are waiting to experience, become a great treasure to the church. In Psalm 71, verse 17, the psalmist says, O God, Thou hast taught me from my youth, and I still declare Thy wondrous deeds. And even when I am old and gray, O God, do not forsake me until I declare Thy strength to this generation and Thy power to all who are to come. Give me a ministry in my old age, because I can talk about Your strength and I can talk about Your power, because I've seen it for so many years. I've lived it. In Psalm 92, a very similar prayer rises from the heart of the psalmist, starting there in verse 12. The righteous man will flourish like a palm tree. He will grow like a cedar in Lebanon, planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God. They will still yield fruit in old age. They will be full of sap and very green to declare that the Lord is upright. Those who can best declare the character of God are those who have walked with Him longest. Older people then in a fellowship do become a treasure, a tremendous blessing. They bring spiritual experience, spiritual strength, spiritual endurance, spiritual wisdom to all of us. And if in the years ahead the church has an abundance of such people, what a source of blessing. But only if they walk in the way of righteousness. And that's why the instruction of Titus verses 2 and 3 in chapter 2 is so very, very important. There's no value in being old if you're not godly. There's no value in being old if you're not a model or an example. And so the Apostle Paul lays down some very specific characteristics that are to be manifest in the older people in the congregation. Let's look at the men. Older men are to be temperate, dignified, sensible, sound in faith, in love, in perseverance. Now, older men is an interesting word, presbutes. It's a word that means just that, older men. Paul uses it in Philemon verse 9 when he refers to himself as Paul the aged. Perhaps, we know he was in his 60s at that time. Perhaps a good definition of it will flow out of Luke 1:18. Zacharias, the father of John the Baptist, had been told that he would have a son, that his wife would become pregnant, and they would have a son, and of course it would be John the Baptist. But Zacharias says, "How shall I know this for certain?" I mean, this seems impossible. Why? "For I am an old man, and my wife is advanced in years." And he uses the word presbutes there, which would lead us to believe that he is saying an old man is one who is unable to produce a child. So you're talking about an age where child production is no longer the norm. That's what the word means. It's talking about a man at that point in his life. And again, Paul uses it to refer to himself in his 60s. There are some ancient sources, such as Philo and Hippocrates, that use the term to refer to people over 50. Somewhere in the 50 and over and 60 and over category, this term comes into play. The Apostle Paul was an old man by this term in his 60s, and somewhere beyond 50, I think we could make this term come into play. So we're talking about that generation of men in the life of the church. Now, these men here are called to be spiritually responsible, to demonstrate godly character. This is very important. In fact, it's so important in the church that if they don't do it, they're to be rebuked. Back in 1 Timothy 5, it says, "Do not sharply rebuke an older man, but rather appeal to him as a father." Now, the assumption here is that in the life of the church, older men are going to sin. And that's true. It doesn't mean that because I'm older, I'm over 50, over 60, over 70, or over 80, that all of a sudden I don't sin anymore. Not so. And it is very reasonable to assume that the very fact that Paul is telling Titus to tell these men to behave this way indicates that there's a real possibility that some of them might not. It is indicated in 1 Timothy 5:1 that elders may need to be rebuked, older men. They may need to be confronted about their sin. And Paul says, if you do it, don't do it sharply. That's what he's saying. Don't do it cruelly. The word here, the verb here, is used only here, and it means to beat with blows or to strike with a fist, and metaphorically, to abuse verbally. To hammer with words, one lexicon says. You don't want to hit them and strike them and abuse them and be harsh with them. Confronting an older man's sin has to be done without violence and without harsh action. It must be done graciously and kindly. And then it says right there how to do it in 1 Timothy 5:1, appeal to him as a father. Parakaleo, come alongside and admonish and encourage and appeal to one with the consideration and respect that you would give to your father. General regard for people in their senior years is of grave concern to God, believe me. Very concerned is God about it. How you treat your father is a matter for God to even discuss in the commandments, the Ten Commandments. In fact, the death penalty was required for disrespect, for hitting, striking your father or mother, or for cursing your father and mother, according to Exodus chapter 21, verses 15 and 17. Those who are older are to be treated with kindness and love and honor and respect. So when you confront an older man because of his sin, you do it graciously. You come alongside and appeal to him with the respect that you would give to a father. Now, Paul is saying to Titus, you must confront the older men in your congregation, and you must call them to this level of spiritual living, or else the implication is they must be so confronted. The patriarchs are to be respected, but they are to be holy also. And when they are, when the older men in a church are holy, godly men, they will become the mentors and models for a level of godliness that will pervade the congregation, including the women and the younger men. Every older man should set as his goal to come to the latter years of his life and be able to say with Paul, I have fought the good fight, I have finished the course, I have kept the faith. 2 Timothy 4:7. Every older man should be able to say, I want you to be a follower of me as I am of Christ. Every older man should be able to say to the younger man, let me show you how to live life. As older men, we should have so much to offer. Paul suggests, first of all, three characteristics: temperate, dignified, and sensible. Let's take the first one, temperate. The word here literally means not drunken, but metaphorically it means moderate, not indulgent, not extravagant. The older man is a man who isn't into excess, who is generally a moderate person. He has learned the high cost of self-indulgent living. He has learned the high cost of filling out all his pleasures, satisfying all his whims, pursuing all his dreams. And he's now filtered through all of that, and he's left a lot of stuff along the path, discarded. When he was young, it was a matter of accumulation, and as he accumulated, he began to find out what really had value. As a young man, he poured energy into a lot of things. As an older man, he can look back and see where that energy was wasted in so many cases. As a young man, he dreamed 1,000 dreams and wanted to accomplish 1,000 things and looks back only to a handful of things that had eternal value. As an older man, he has had a myriad of experiences, one after another, day after day, month after month, year after year, and life has been moderated by those experiences. He has found that what he thought he wanted that would give him satisfaction never did. And all the possessions and all the accumulation and all the reputation and all the achievement and all the accolades have been somehow set aside on the path of life and discarded because they had no real value. He has come to a right value system. He has come to be, as a related verb puts it, sober-minded, used in 1 Corinthians 15:34, or as another related word used in 1 Peter, sober in spirit. In other words, he's got his priorities down now. He knows what experiences were valuable, and in many cases, they were the ones he feared the most, and now knows they rendered him the best fruit. They made him the man he is. In many cases, what he didn't want was what was most valuable, and what he pursued with all his might was least valuable. He knows that now. He's filtered life out. And very often when men come to this age in life, although there are certain physical things they need perhaps to increase their comfort level, they have, if they're godly and have walked the path of righteousness, they've really filtered through almost everything. And they should find themselves being reduced to a simpler and simpler and simpler life, because they now know what things have real value. They now know what people have real value, what relationships have real value, what efforts have real value. That is absolutely crucial for them to dispense to a younger generation. Where there is a moderate, non-indulgent, non-extravagant, sober-minded, sober-spirited knowledge of priorities through years and years of experience, you have the wisdom that needs to be passed down. It's like the father who sits with his little children and says, I know you don't understand why. You'll have to trust me for this. You can't do this. I know why you can't do it. You don't understand why. I've been there. I'll tell you why. And so these men are to be men who are temperate. Their lives have been reduced to the irreducible minimums of what really matters.
Listening to Grace to You with John MacArthur. He's a pastor, author, and president of the Master's College and Seminary, both in the Los Angeles area. His lesson today examined this important principle: those who can best declare the character of God are those who have walked with Him the longest. Helpful insight from John's current study called Revolutionary Living in a Dark Culture. John, with God's plan for older men and older women in mind, and thinking about next week's Mother's Day celebration here in the U.S., does it surprise you how intense the attacks are these days on biblical motherhood? Encouragement for being godly, virtuous moms seems hard to find in today's culture.
Yeah, I'd say it's very hard to find. We're missing something that is deadly serious and dangerous to this culture. We need to connect again with what the Bible says about motherhood. Let me mention a beautiful little gift book called The Extraordinary Mother. The Extraordinary Mother explores the ways that many Bible women teach lessons for moms today, like Eve and Sarah and Deborah, and the mother of Samson, Abigail, even Mary, the mother of Jesus. You'll learn from these ladies what to do and what not to do. I'd love to have you order a copy of The Extraordinary Mother. Also, an ideal gift to give your mom at Mother's Day or give anybody anytime is the MacArthur Study Bible. You can get an edition of the Bible, the one that you especially appreciate and use, and the MacArthur Study Bible will come in that edition with about 25,000 footnotes explaining every passage. Order yours now to receive it in time for Mother's Day.
With Mother's Day just over a week away, let me encourage you to get in touch soon. If you'd like to order either of these resources, pick up The Extraordinary Mother or a copy of the MacArthur Study Bible as you contact us today.
Reach our staff weekdays from 9:30 to 5 GMT from your UK landline. Use our free phone number 0800 389 3958. And from anywhere in Europe, call 0044 1233 662 262. A reminder that Grace to You is your source for 3,000 recorded sermons by John MacArthur. They're available on MP3 free of charge. Start downloading now at gty.org.uk. While online, take advantage of the extensive and helpful written content, our blog, Q&As, articles on issues affecting the church, daily devotionals, plus the transcripts of John's 3,000 sermons. And to purchase one of John's topical books, New Testament commentaries, or the MacArthur Study Bible, our website is the place to go. Find us at gty.org.uk, or from anywhere in Europe, call us at 0044 1233 662 262. And keep in mind the impact you're having on people in your community, an impact for God's truth. When you give to this ministry, thanks for your support when writing to P.O. Box 153, Ashford, Kent, TN 24, 8WE. Now for John MacArthur and the staff, be here for 30 minutes of unleashing God's truth, one verse at a time, on the next Grace to You. Thanks again for studying with us today. Be here next time when John MacArthur explores more powerful truth from the Word of God on Grace to You.